1.2 billion rand in suspicious transactions and evidence of governance failings. These are the findings that have been unearthed in ENS Africa's interim update on the forensic investigation into EOH's historical licensing contracts with the state. Without mentioning names, company CEO Stephen Tonkolla says eight perpetrators are largely responsible for the irregularities, but also not directly implicating any of the four executives who resigned yesterday. He joins us on the line to discuss his confidence levels in terms of a complete turnaround for the company now, if this is what the findings are at the interim stage. Thanks so much, Stephen, for joining us on the line this evening. So in this probe reviewing all your large historical licensing contracts with the state, suspicious transactions, as I say, worth 1.2 billion rand have been found. Where does this quantum sit relative to what you were expecting to be unearthed?
Good evening. I mean, I was hoping that we'd have nothing, but that clearly wasn't the case. I mean, it's a big number. It's happened over 4 years. So I suppose the good news is that in the size of the company that does 18 billion of turnover a year, it's, you know, 300 million a year. So what's really been helpful is we've managed to really track it down, put our arms around it, and we can see it. Eight individuals, 84% of the payments go to 20 companies, and we now need to work through and see which of them are actually either for payments for middlemen, potentially bribes, were they actually people just stealing from us, putting in false invoices, or where there's been over-invoicing from third parties on work that wasn't really done. And clearly some of them may be legitimate. And I think also important is 93% of the payments came from a single legal entity. And when you run 270 legal entities through your company, that gives you some hope that you can actually put your arms around this and cauterize it.
Okay. Of course, all of this coming ahead of three long-serving executives having resigned. You can't fault those that are drawing inferences at this stage, Stephen, and connecting a few dots here, can you?
Yes, I think, as I said this morning in my webcast, is these three senior members, directors, have been in the company for between 8 and 12 years. And, you know, two of them were actually very involved on the board as we went through the process, having a look at the ENS findings and everything. And at the conclusion, they have said, you know, they feel that for the company to move forward properly, the best thing for the clients and the employees is they resign and move on so that there's, you know, space for new management to build a new business. And that there's no questions about the past because, you know, all the past management and board have now gone.
Surely, though, some of those questions will, you know, crop up as these investigations progress. As we say, this is just the preliminary phase at this stage, Stephen. And some accountability surely has to go their way because all of this happened under their watch.
No, sure. I mean, where we've got to now is we know more or less what happened. We've got this group of payments, and we know the suppliers and the people that were involved. And now what ENS is going to do is they're going to work through the actual detail with the forensic accountants and the forensic auditors and piece each of the transactions together. And where there is actual evidence of wrongdoing, then we will prosecute, whether it's criminally, if it's bribery and corruption, and civilly, if it's fraud, where people have stolen money from us.
Yeah. Stephen, you say that there are eight perpetrators. Who are these eight perpetrators? Are they still sitting within the EOH stable, or have they come forward? Have they been fired? Have they resigned?
No, they have all left the company. Some of them were suspended. Some of them, when we approached them and told them that they needed to be interviewed by ENS, they refused to do so and resigned. Two of them were directors of EOH Matomba. The other six were people that worked for them.
You say that you're looking to press criminal charges as well as civil claims to recover stolen funds. So what are the chances of those funds being recovered, and how much are you possibly looking to recover here? You know, can you do any back of the matchbox figures at this stage?
I think two things. The board unanimously decided to press charges. So ENS have actually been given that mandate, and so they're running that process. On the amounts, we now need to go through each of these pieces of evidence, put them together, get the payment, the contract, any emails, SMSs, WhatsApps that we've collected, any of the whistleblowing evidence that's been given to us. And what ENS will then do is they'll put them in the categories. And only once they've done that do I know how much was stolen from us, how much was paid in bribes, and we can start putting a number around that figure.
I ask the question because the assumption is that these are very complex transactions that we're looking at, where the perpetrators aren't the only ones, one would assume, who stood as benefactors. Do you see this becoming a web that's hard to untangle as you progress?
I think, the difficulty we've got is that we can't follow the money. I can only know what I've paid into what bank account. I can't follow it thereafter. And this is why if you have enough evidence around suspicious transactions, you issue these Section 34 reports under the Prevention of Corruptions Act to the Hawks, and then they can obviously subpoena bank records and follow the money, and they'll have a much better view on where everything goes. But on the evidence that we've got where people have stolen money from us, then that's a civil claim, and we can actually prosecute that ourselves.
Yeah. Stephen, do you have any specific timelines that have been pegged out already?
No. Obviously, we've done a lot of work. I mean, we've sifted through over a million emails. We've used some fairly sophisticated methodologies to sift through lots and lots of payments, emails, WhatsApps, evidence to come up with this as a target that we can now go and piece it together. It's going to take time, but some of it is easier than others, and some, as you said, are quite complicated, where people may have just put an invoice through on a project, but actually that invoice has got nothing to do with the project. We have evidence of that, where people were taking money out, but where there was a project with profit, they were taking the profit out by putting an invoice against it, so it actually has nothing to do with the contracting party at all.
Okay, Stephen, we're going to hit pause on the conversation for now. We'll continue straight after the break, taking a look at where this leaves the business moving forward. That with Stephen von Koller, CEO of EOH. So we've got EOH cleaning up its image, and that following corporate governance scandals worth a potential 1.2 billion rand. Still with us on the line this evening, CEO of EOH, Stephen von Koller. Thanks so much, Stephen, for staying with us. Well, we know that this probe was initially initiated after Microsoft cut ties with EOH, after EOH suffered reputational woes. Have those reputational woes now put any other contracts at risk?
That's a very interesting question. I mean, if you have a look what you need to do, if you have a look whether you're going through a blacklisting process with National Treasury, whether you're going through a blacklisting process with the Department of Justice in the U.S., and, most of the banks and financial and large companies use the same process. They want to know, do you know what happened? Do you know why it happened? What are you doing to remedy it? And have you prosecuted the people? And so we've done I've done a lot of presentations with ENS and Sir Timon Newman, my chief commercial officer, with our large corporates risk committees, and we've taken them through the process, what we're changing, how we're changing, what we're doing about it. And we've had an amazingly positive response on how quickly we've moved. So I'm feeling quite positive that we've managed to put our arms around it. We're doing all the right things. And we've actually got a basis to move forward now and, deal with it, but put it behind us. And what's even better for me is we now have the processes and procedures and policies that we really can take the board's zero tolerance for bribery and corruption policies forward and deliver it across the businesses.
Okay, so as you say, your major clients for the most part seeing what you're doing now as a remedy enough for now at least. Talk us through some of the governance structures you're now having to be to put in place to mitigate against unsubstantiated payments, tender irregularities and other unethical business practices.
So the key one has been around large tender bid processes where you have to get enterprise partners into the business. You've got to do a proper KYC or know your client. You've got to understand that they have the capability and capacity to deliver on what they're doing. So you have to do a due diligence. And then also, you know, once that is delivered, you need to have timesheets signed off by the project manager to make sure that, you know, the payments reflect the work they've done. And that's just a simple thing. Then you get into things like having an internal audit process. We didn't have an internal audit process, and that's very important business tool, as we call it, the third line of defense in the mechanism. We've now split things like we split finance for payments from the risk compliance legal process from the corporate finance process. You haven't got one person being poacher gamekeeper, you know, authorizing a payment and making it. It's just these are fairly simple controls, but they should be in every business. And EOH was this entrepreneurial business that grew very quickly. And as the center grew, they never actually put in any of these normal corporate controls that you would expect.
Nevertheless, Stephen, does all of this open EOH up to any broader investigations? Because even though unknowingly you potentially won tenders or contracts unfairly?
Sure. Part of the process now is as ENS go through and piece these together, where we see that there have been tender irregularities, we will be discussing them with the relevant authorities and companies and seeing what needs to be done to remedy them. The good thing, I suppose, in a way, is that most of this misdemeanor happened during the 2014 to 2017 period. It reached a crescendo in 2016 and then fell off very quickly when ENS put in the tender processes and gates that you had to go through. And so most of those contracts have rolled off already. And so we'll have to go back and have those discussions for, these past periods.
Yeah. You've highlighted that the resignations of, three executives that you've seen would allow the company to move forward by giving the new management team space. How quickly do you see the vacant positions, which are key positions, being filled now?
So what we've decided to do is myself and Megan will step in. Megan, the FD, will step into those positions for the moment. We've done extensive strategy and budgeting over the last 3 or 4 months. So it's actually quite a good time to have a look at it. I don't want to rush it. I think, as you rightly said, these positions are very important. We've got to get them right. And I think at this level, you owe it to the shareholders and the employees to make sure you get the best people. So you've got to look internally and externally. We've got very good bench strength that sat underneath each of these CEOs on a on the Excos, and we'll be having discussions with them. But I just want to get the structure right, the strategy right, and I want to use their input, their DNA that they've got from the last 10 years to make sure we make the right decision.
Of course, all focus is going to be on stabilizing this business, gaining its reputation back in the market as well. And one assumes it's proving to be quite a distraction in terms of, your pursuit of growth. How much growth opportunity has this all seen, has this seen you forfeit?
Listen, it's been a very tough year. I think it's a tough year economically, so you have to factor that into account. We've had some customers that delayed in contracting us while we were going through the enhanced due diligence risk processes. Most of those have either, completed, and we haven't had one, negative outcome yet. Some people still have us on risk watch. Some of us, some of them have taken us off their blacklist, and we're back to normal. But the most important thing, I suppose, is, this 1 billion rand that I promised the market we would raise through partnerships and disposals. We are really 50% of our way through that. We sold 70% of one of our RP companies, CCS, at an 8.5 times multiple on EBITDA, which is a very high valuation. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty confident there's a lot of value still sitting in the business. That's what I saw. I spoke about it at half year. And that's the exciting part. We can actually get this business back on its feet, fairly quickly over the next 12 to 18 months and get it back to, being stable and, what it was.
Well, Stephen, we'll be touching base with you, of course, as things progress. Thanks so much for your time this evening. Of course, Stephen van Coller is CEO of EOH.